This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Well, thank you so much, Parker, and welcome to Time Signatures. I'm your host, Jim Irvin, and I'm pleased to welcome today's guest. She hails from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and she works hard to keep the blues alive in her hometown. Influenced by the likes of Coco Taylor, Etta James, and Big Mama Thornton, just to name a few, our guest got her start singing in church at a young age. That influence, coupled with her mother's love for the blues, gave Miss Freddy the foundation and helped her begin down the road of the blues. Rather than list off some of her accomplishments, I would really rather hear it directly from her. Ladies and gentlemen, Pittsburgh's Lady of the Blues, Miss Freddy, it's an honor to have you with us today on Time Signatures. Welcome.
Thank you. Hi. Thank you for having me. Hey, everybody out there.
So good to have you. And Miss Freddy, I have to tell you right out of the gate, I love your sound, but you have to tell me about your earliest memories of music as you were growing up.
Growing up as a kid, I love listening to music. And I listened to anything out of Stax Records, Motown, you name it. And myself and probably a friend or two, especially as one girl, we would pretend that we were singing in front of thousands as kids. And I've never had any formal training of singing. Never. So we would just, go around pretending, we're singing. And then one Christmas, my mom bought me a pink microphone that was attached to a little pink whatever. I guess it was a speaker. And I just, pretend I was singing. So That's how it started out. I just loved music and I just loved to sing back then.
Okay. Well, as someone who has also gotten to start singing in church, talk about those early years as you honed your skills at the church.
I first started singing in church when I was 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a solo in the church. That didn't go over too well. After I was done, the church was silent. Nobody said anything. And it's like, that's where my stage fright came in. I developed my stage fright was there, and it's still around to this day, but not as bad as it was. So throughout the years, if I sang in a church choir, I wouldn't volunteer and get up. I would sing as softly as I could so nobody could hear me. And I liked it that way up until I joined my first band ever in 96.
Okay. Now, at what point in your life did you decide that music would be your chosen path?
I think in 96.
Okay.
When I was singing one of my favorite songs to sing to my youngest. I was singing Silent Night a cappella. And the guy that I was dating, he was in a blues band. Actually, the band that I joined, he played bass.
Oh,
and
wow.
I would go out to hear his band. And I thought the band was cool, and people loved them. And, it was great. And I said, I could never do that. I would always have that in the back of my head. So one night he heard me. And he said, we're looking for a singer. And I'm like, okay. He's like, why don't you come and audition? And I'm like, I gave him a lot of pushback, a lot of resistance, because I'm like, no. And he finally convinced me. And so I auditioned, for the band, and I got in. And it took me probably, I was in a band from 96 to about 2002, 2003, when I wanted to venture out on my own.
Okay.
For my own game. And so that's when I knew, music was going to be around with me for a very long time.
Now, according to your bio information, you're not just a singer, you're also a mom, you're a nurse, and there's more. And as you referenced, you began your journey in 96. I'm assuming this was with the Blues Music Works under the direction of Big Al Leavitt. Is that correct?
Yes, that was my first band that ever, you know, besides the high school band, but actually, you know, as a singer, as the lead singer. And Big Al was great. He loved blues. He did a mean left-hand thing on his keyboard. And he was also a psychologist, so he was a good guy.
Yeah.
And it was kind of interesting. Throughout my years, I have met musicians who have, like, this healthcare, you know, thing behind them, and it always fascinated me. And I remember once I joined the band and started singing out that I would be behind my boyfriend, the bass player, sitting in a chair facing the wall while they faced the crowd. And I did that for almost a year.
Wow.
Until Big Al said, you know, people want to hear you. And I said, well, they can hear me. And he's like, no, they want to see what they're listening to. They know you sing. They're aware of you, but you need to, you know, come out and show people, show yourself. And I was terrified. And he said, you know that old saying, okay, just imagine everybody with no clothes. He said, don't do that. Don't imagine people with no clothes on. He said, you'll never be the same. And I said, okay. And he told me I had to figure out a way. And it didn't take me till years later that I finally figured out how to overcome that stage fright. What I do is I am my own worst critic, believe me.
Understood.
I pretend, you know, that I'm, you know, in the audience and I'm looking at me on the stage and I'm saying to myself, hey, my friends told me about you. I'm really not into the blues. You have to keep me here for at least an hour. Make sure you entertain me, you know, because I've never heard of you before. Like, I am saying things that I've heard throughout my, you know, music career. And so I'm saying this to myself and it helps. And then probably about 10, 15 years ago, people would come up to me after my shows and they could relate to a certain song or I hear some of their stories. And I said, you know, what I do is not mine to keep. I have the tattoo to prove it. So I got it tattooed on me and I said, I have to go out here and give back to people because it's the only right thing to do.
What a great way to approach that. Now, Miss Freddie, in 1998, the proverbial rug got pulled out from under you, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And, you know, God bless my gynecologist. He's since passed away. I went to him for one problem. And then, you know, out of clear blue sky, he's like, hey, with your, given your, you know, your history, family history of breast cancer.
Sure.
Have you had a mammogram? And I said, not yet. Well, maybe I should get one. He said, you should get one. And so I got a mammogram. And so that was in June. And then September that I was diagnosed, like midsummer, you know, breast cancer.
Mm.
I cried for 24 hours straight. And I was a nurse already.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
I've taken care of patients with cancer, especially breast cancer. And to be on that side of it, I cried for 24 hours straight. All I did was go to the bathroom and drink water. I constantly cried. It was nothing my boyfriend could do, the bass player. And so my mom called me the next day and I'm just bawling my eyes out. I'm crying on the phone and, you know, she really couldn't say anything. And then she finally said, you know, you got to start thinking of your kids. But it was the way she said it. It wasn't mean and it wasn't firm, but it was like, okay, my mom's trying to tell me something. And me, this is how I feel. I said, God's trying to tell me something. I need to get it together. Yeah. So I got it together and I talked it over with my boyfriend. I said, okay, I'm going to do what I have to do. And it was the first time, because it was the right breast cancer, I was on the table for 12 hours.
Wow.
Because I had reconstruction done. And I had some trials and tribulations of recovery, but I recovered.
Sure.
And it came back again. I knew it was going to come back. So I thought I had reached my 5-year mark, and then 2004, it felt kind of weird, left breast. So I called the surgeon up. I said, I think it's back. He said, why don't you come on in the office? So he biopsied me. It was a Tuesday, I believe. And he called me 3 days later and said, when do you want to have surgery? Now, I had taken off the week, the following week, knowing that the biopsy was going to come back positive. And I said, how's next week? And he's like, really? I said, I've already taken it off. I already talked to my boss. So, and it was that following Wednesday. And that year was a challenge because I had developed infections and all that. I was so stubborn being a nurse. And I said, I'll never do this again to myself. but that year, so the surgery was that February. Matter of fact, February this year. How was that, 21 years ago? Is that about right? Yeah.
Yeah.
21 years ago. Wow. God, that was a long time.
Yeah.
Then I had chemo in September. They don't like to give you chemotherapy that far out. You know, they want you to heal. They give you like 6 weeks, 8 weeks to heal, see how you're doing, and then the chemo. But I was having infections. It was just a whirlwind. And so I ended up getting chemo that year, September. And I almost died because I was so stubborn. I was in the studio recording with my oldest son and my nephew. They were into the rap, so they wanted like a blues kind of a feel on, you know, a hook or chord line. And they looked at me. My nephew said, you don't look good, Aunt Freddie. And I said, yeah, I'm going to the hospital after I'm done. So I ended up going to the ER, and by the time I got up there, my temperature was 104. I was a little delirious, and they said, by the way, are you a diabetic? I'm like, not that I know of. Well, the chemotherapy had just flipped me every way, but so.
Wow.
And that was my challenged year.
Yeah. As somebody who worked as a hospice aide for 4.5 years, I've always told people I know enough about medicine to be scary, you know, to be dangerous. And it's tougher when you have the knowledge that you have to listen to yourself and do the right things. But I am thankful that that you took those steps. Do you find that that you use your platform as a performer to sometimes talk about cancer awareness and specifically breast cancer for women?
I do. I do it every year.
Beautiful.
There's an event called Pink Day in Leechburg, Pennsylvania. Matter of fact, this will be the last year. I think this is like the 12th year, 11th or 12th year. And ever since it started, except for last year, I couldn't make it because I had a conflict with another show. But they raise awareness and money for the Breast Cancer Foundation. And I've been a part of it, and I definitely had to make sure I was a part of it this year, because God bless Sherry Jackson Price. That is the woman who spearheads it. I mean, she works her butt off, and she ended up with breast cancer herself.
Oh, wow.
You know, so, but she's doing fine. But she said this will be the last year. There are a lot of people at this point. It grew big. It became actually known nationally, which, you know, is great. And of course, locally, Southwest Pennsylvania, Tri-State, and there are bands that, you know, want to get in, and it's voluntary, but they have everything. They have games, food. I love jewelry. So there's people that have jewelry. So, you know, I always try to support the local vendors. They have they just have everything. It's almost like you're at an amusement park.
Okay.
When they do it. So I've done that. And then I used to do the Relay for Life in Natrona Heights, Pennsylvania, when they would have it. And I would do that on the, you know, I did that for several years. So, and every now and then somebody will call me, you know, hey, can you come and do a couple songs? We're raising money. You know, somebody may have had leukemia, somebody's battling some kind of cancer. So I always try to, let me look at my schedule. And of course, people are very sweet when they say, I know you're busy. I'm like, way to give me the guilt trip. But people also know that I will move heaven and earth for my, as far as schedule. And I've had a lot of cooperation so far, and I haven't had to move my schedule a lot.
That's
to
nice.
Do what I have to do. So, yeah. So I do give back as far as performing as a singer.
Wonderful. Well, Miss Freddie, I'm going to turn the page here and get to some more happiness. In 2002, you formed your own band, Blue Phase. I want to talk just a little bit about that. What were the early struggles getting things going with your band? Talk about that for a minute.
I think the biggest struggle, and I wouldn't call it a struggle, I think it was a challenge, was getting the band, the players.
Okay.
Now, the players from, except for my boyfriend, I had the drummer play a bit for me. And then the guy that, let me see, what's it? The one guy, he actually ended up playing guitar for me. He actually, we're in a band together, you know, today.
Okay.
But he played guitar. And then when I got a guitar player who came from, when I started with BMW, he came like a month later. He was 16 at the time. He's a monster guitar player, and he still is to this day. Then he came and helped me out until I could find my own people. So I want to say the first maybe several years was a challenge, because I know a lot of musicians can relate. It is so hard to try to keep the same band members. You know,
yeah, I
call it loyalty. It is very hard. And now, you know, I don't have that problem. I don't have to worry about that out of eat because I have the two bands now. But yeah, back then, and then trying to find gigs, I had no kind of recording, nothing. So the venues that I did perform with BMW, I would go to, and I would sing a cappella. And the song that I love singing, absolutely hands down love song, is At Last by Etta James. Even though it came out in the 50s, a big band did it, but Etta James made it famous. And I used to go around singing that. And that's how I, you know, I got my gigs. So those were the challenges. I think having players in the band was the biggest challenge of all.
Well, Freddie, several years later, you formed not one, but two, count them, two blues bands, Miss Freddie's Blues Band and Electric Variation, and Miss Freddie's Home Cooking Band, which sounds good to me, featuring more of an acoustic approach to the blues, classic rock, and gospel. Talk about that process for a minute, and why two bands?
It's interesting you say that, because I, you know, I sit back and I'm like, why do I have two bands? Well, I do know why. The blues band was first, but I was doing like an acoustic duo and then a trio with a couple of the members before I formed the home cooking band.
Okay.
And then after a while, the home cooking band came about. Then it was four of us, and now today there's five of us. So it was very easy because, you know, people, the guys knew people who would be interested. And so the home cooking band, there was four of us. And I said, you know, keyboard would be great. And so my keyboard player, he's been with us for almost 2 years now, although I've known him before, you know, this. So, and that is pretty easy. And the only members that are in both bands are myself and the bass player that I have. We're the only, you know, and everybody else is different. So I love both worlds. You have the blues band where we're doing the, you know, the down home, get down with it, sassy blues, and sometimes, you know, the combining blues rock. But then the home cooking band, it's a little bit more intimate. It's a little bit more into your, you know, in your face kind of deal, where we're taking classic rock. I love doing a little bit of jazz. I'll combine some gospel, and I'll combine some of those down home blues, you know, the back porch blues. That's what I like doing with that band.
Yep.
So it's very, very nice. It kind of breaks up, you know, me becoming bored, because I get bored very easily. I think that's why I kind of in trouble when I was a kid in elementary school, but that's another story.
Man, when you hear gospel blues, there's just something about it,
right?
You know,
right, with a combination, and it's been around for years.
Yes, yes.
Because I've, you know, when I was 4 years old, my first time hearing Wade in the Water. And that song stuck with me throughout my life. And then I was approached by a musician out of Ohio. And he wanted me to, you know, sing it. I said, okay. So I went in the studio, local studio here, put down my vocals. And then he had a man and a woman out of Nashville. She did like backup vocals with me on it. And I tell you, I have sang Wade in the Water in many different styles myself. I've sang it kind of jazzy, kind of bluesy, kind of rock and gospel. But to hear it, you know, when you can flip a song so many different ways.
Right.
You know, that says something about, and I'm not bragging. I tell people that's not who I am. It's what I do. And I turn it into Miss Freddie's way, because we all have our way.
I have to tell you, Miss Freddie, I definitely hear the influences of the late Coco Taylor in your voice. You've got that growl going on. But I also noticed some sounds, a little bit of Etta James. But the very first song that I heard you sing, Miss Freddie's Gonna Get You, really caught me off guard. And I'm speaking legitimately here, because you have strongly similar sounds to one of our own local blues ladies, Detroit's Queen of the Blues, Miss Thornetta Davis. Now, are you familiar with her music?
Yes, I am. I am familiar with her, and I'm familiar with her music. Yeah.
I got goosebumps listening, because I know Thornetta. I've seen Thornetta perform many times. I'm also a professional photographer, so I've shot several of her shows. And I heard that song, and I went, man, does that sound like Thornetta? I mean, but you have your own sound too, and I have to give you a lot of credit for that, because while you have some similarities, like you said, you're doing it Freddie's way.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And there's a lot of cover songs that I do, but I've now been doing 50-50. 50, you know, half original, half covers. And people like that. And I'm more comfortable. I love doing originals. Now I have people writing songs because the last, you know, the last singles that I've been doing, from Wade in the Water to the last one that was released last year, songwriters are chomping at the bit. Hey, what do you think about this song? I'm like, okay. You know, I said I have my projects I'm working on, but it's okay. So I like to, because I tell people, when I hear it, it only takes the first note. It only takes the first note that I know that I'm going to love the song. And I said, you know what? I'll listen to it, but I'm going to tell you, I'm going to flip it into like my way, you know, because people already know of what I do and who I am.
Right.
So to turn it, you know, to turn it Miss Freddie's way, I think it would be more appreciated. So, yeah. Yeah, Fix You Up Fine. Miss Freddie's Gonna Fix You Up Fine. That's original, written by Mike Sweeney. He's a bass player here in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And Mike writes a lot of my original stuff. Probably about 80% of my original stuff Mike has written.
Okay.
So I'm very, very, yeah, I'm very, very happy about that. And yes, when you see Miss Davis, tell her I said hi.
You just did. She'll see it. I promise you, she'll see it. I'll make sure she gets a copy of this interview.
Yeah, and, I follow her. You know, every now and then things will come up, you know, things that she has done, awards that she's been getting. I said, that's great. You know, keeping the blues alive. That's what it's about.
I was so happy when she won the BMA, because she had been there so many times, and to hear her tell the story, I think she had been nominated 9 times. So when they let her know that she was nominated again, she's like, all right, well, I guess we'll go down there. And they started calling off, you're getting ready, and they called off the name, and she said she sat there stunned, because she couldn't believe that they actually called her name. And somebody said, honey, that means you got to go. You got to get up there. And then she got up there and she started singing, I believe everything's going to be all right. And I mean, I love Thornetta, just because she is such a sweet lady. her and her husband James and her band. Mm-hmm. They are mm-hmm. just salt of the earth. They're so incredibly cool. If you're looking for any covers to do on one of your bluesy albums, I'd love to hear your version of Wang Dang Doodle, because I'll bet you nail it.
I've done Wang Dang Doodle, actually, every now and then, because there will be people who love Wang Dang Doodle because I get the crowd involved. And okay. I used to take my wireless mic around. I don't do that anymore, but, you know, I get the crowd involved. And it's kind of interesting because when I'm doing family-friendly shows, some of the kids are like, you know that doodle, that Yankee doodle? You do? I said, no, it's Wang Dang Doodle. And, you know, and it's just, yeah, it's a cool song. I love the way Coco Taylor did it.
Oh,
you know, because at first she didn't want to do it, but but she did it. And I don't know if the first time was at a blues festival that she sang it, but it's on YouTube. And I just love the way she did it, like commanded the stage and, you know, with the growl. And I said, I want to be like that when I grow up.
Well, Freddie Stover, my new friend and musician known as Miss Freddie, I sincerely want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your time today, and thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, you're very welcome, and thank you for all that you do, and don't forget to tell Fernette I said hi.
You just did for the second time. I'll make sure she sees it, I promise you. Well, that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures. Once again, my thanks to Miss Freddie Stover. Y'all really need to check her out, but I also want to thank all of you for being here, for without you, none of this would be possible. Jim Irvin reminding you that keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues one story at a time, that's my mission. Until next time, so long, my friends.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on CABS, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby,
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.
Featuring the faculty, staff, students, and others that helped to make Lansing's premier college what it is today. LCC Connect, Mid-Michigan's connection to Lansing Community College. To find out more about our featured programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
If you're considering returning to school, exploring career options, or needing support in life transitions, Lansing Community College has the Adult Resource Center available to qualified students. The Adult Resource Center staff provides one-on-one appointments, registration assistance, referrals to community and campus resources, tuition and childcare grants, academic advising, and other helpful tools to help with your educational career. To find out more information, visit lcc.edu and search Adult Resource Center.
I'm Stephen Cutter, and I host a show called Coach Cut's Corner here on LCC Connect. Coach Cut's Corner is about Lansing Stars baseball program, mental performance, and just getting better in everyday life. You can always find more about LCC Connect shows and listen on demand at lccconnect.org.
In 1911, Thomas and Emily Dalton looked with compassion at their community. They didn't have much money, but they dedicated themselves to meeting physical and spiritual needs by creating the City Rescue Mission of Lansing. For over 100 years, through the Great Depression and several recessions, through world wars and cold wars, the mission continues to work in Michigan's capital area, seeing the need and meeting the need. A lot has changed in the past century, but the power of compassion in action will never change. A small act of kindness can impact our entire community. We see it reflected every day in the progress made by women and men working to transition out of homelessness and into independence. They can do it because of the support of our fellow rescuers. Together, we provide food, shelter, and hope to hundreds of people in need. For more information on the City Rescue Mission of Lansing, visit bearescuer.org.
The Lansing Community College Job Training Center provides opportunities for individuals to earn several work certifications in 3 months or less.
Career training options are available both online and in person, covering a range of careers,
including healthcare, automation, IT, accounting, and more.
A complete list of LCC Job Training Center programs can be found at lcc.edu/JTC.
LCC. Connect.
Voices. Vibes. Vision.
Hey, 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 this is Lisa A., and you're listening to Who's That Star on LCC Connect at Lansing Community College. Who's That Star is a behind-the-scenes show where I sit down and talk with the employees at the college. This is an inside look at LCC, where you have a chance to learn about their passions, projects, and what inspires them both in their work and personal lives. I'm your host, Lisa Alexander, and I'm so excited to get a chance to talk to all the people who make LCC great. This show is for you to get to know the people that work at Lansing Community College a little bit more and see what makes them tick. Are you ready? Okay, let's find out who's that star. Today's episode is about roots, growth, and what it means to find your way back to work that feels meaningful. My guest today is someone whose story is shaped by both where they come from and where they've chosen to build their life. Born in a small town in southern Illinois, today's star eventually made Michigan home. Growing up right here in Mason and developing deep ties to the community and the people in it. Education has always played an important role in today's star journey. Following in family footsteps, they attended Western Michigan University, where they studied history, originally planning to become a history teacher. Along the way, today's star has worn many hats: substitute teacher, student employee in the cafeteria at Western Michigan, camp counselor at Van Buren Youth Camp, assessment center team member here at LCC, and even time in the corporate world at Dart Container, a shift that brought a whole new perspective. Each chapter added something: insight, resilience, humor, and an appreciation for meaningful work, eventually leading him back to LCC. Outside of work, today's star values balance, reflection, and might even surprise you with a creative side that includes an appreciation for comedy, something that says a lot about how he sees the world. So, are you ready to meet today's star? Drum roll, please. Today's star is
Pat Sievert.
Pat, I want to welcome you to Who's That Star, and I also want to thank you for your patience because, boy, we are having a time up here.
That's all right. Thanks for having me, Lisa.
Yes, definitely. So for folks who may not know you yet, what is your role at LCC, and how do you usually explain what you do?
So I'm the lead support for academic advising. So I feel like I do a lot of different things for the advisors, you know, kind of maintaining calendars, ordering things for them, just helping with general reports and all
kinds of
things.
Keeping us in line.
Yeah, I think the favorite description I heard for what I do, Alan Sorrell said, was I'm the hand that spins the wheel. I like that.
You are. Yeah. No, you've brought a lot to our department. You keep us together. You keep us organized. You make sure that we have everything that we need. And that's such an important role. And you definitely have a great attitude to deal with all the craziness that you have to deal in the advising office. So we are so glad that you are here. But coming to this role, it just didn't happen. You've had a few different professional chapters along the way. How did you find your way back to LCC. So you went through some things. So how did you find a way?
I feel like, I don't know that my career really followed like any set path, you know, by any means. You know, like, when I was growing up, I don't know that I ever really knew what I wanted to do exactly. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, when I was really young, I maybe wanted to do something more creative. You know, as a really small kid, I was like, I wanted to make comic books or whatever. You know, that was probably just because that's like what I liked.
Right.
That's what I read. You know, those are my favorite thing to, you know, as my hobby. Then I was like, oh, you got to do something serious. And I was really into like history in high school because I had like some really good history teachers. So that made me, you know, go into studying that in college. So I went through like the student teaching in history. And then once I graduated, I couldn't really find a full-time job, at least in Michigan.
Right.
Maybe if I had left the state, I could have found something. But I was like, I didn't know where to go and, you know, just kind of.
Were you in this area? Like, were you looking in this area? Or did you, like, look the whole state?
I mean, I looked all over the state. Yeah. And, you know, I applied in other states, too. But it was kind of, you know, when you're first out of college and you're broke, it's kind of like, you really got to.
I need to work.
You got to apply, you know, $200 to get your license transferred to each state. You know, it's kind of hard to do that. And so, yeah, I would substitute teach just to, you know, try to get my foot in the door places. And after doing that for a year and a half, I was kind of like, I don't know if I even want to teach after doing this, you know.
Yeah, no, yeah. I can understand that.
Yeah, so I was like looking for something else to do, and I got the job at the assessment center. I was just looking for, you know, jobs and saw that, and I was like, well, it's at a college. Maybe that's something that might be interesting, and started working there. Worked like Matt Lemon and Jesse, mm-hmm. who now is the director over there, and I liked that job a lot, and I was there almost 3 years. I really liked it, but it was stuck at part-time, like no benefits. So I was just like, okay, now I should look for something else that maybe is full-time. Both my parents worked at Dart where I ended up, so they were always like, well, maybe you should look at this. And so I just, you know, said, well, I have a lot of office skills from this job, and they had some interviews, and they liked me, so they hired me, and was able to take some of the skills I picked up at LCC and get the job and kind of learned as I went there. And I was there for, you know, like 15 years, but yeah.
That's a long time. It's interesting how you were able to use those skills that you've learned through education and working here at LCC to go into the corporate world.
Mm-hmm.
And did you notice like differences in regards to how like the setting or how people did things versus?
I think, you know, it was definitely more I think the environment was more relaxed here. You know, I think like, you know, I remember like the office was huge when I worked at LCC. Everybody would like the day after the new episode of The Office aired, everybody would be talking about it.
Uh-huh.
And then like if you try to do that at, you know, everybody be like, hey, talk about that in the break room. We're working here.
You know,
like,
right,
you know, like, okay, you know.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I do love about working here at LCC is the relaxed environment,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that they really believe in a work-life balance and that you are going to interact with your coworkers and you do have conversations that are more than just work, right? You got interests and things that you share, and that's a reason why I like it here.
Yeah, sure. Obviously, don't talk about something inappropriate for students, but, you know, it's like, we can, we're people. We can talk about
and we have lives and stuff like that. Well, with all those experiences that's behind you, like, what brought you back to LCC?
So, you know, after I'd been there, you know, over 15 years, they had to do some layoffs. And so it wasn't, like, performance-based, but I was one of the people that was laid off. So I was looking for work. And one of my friends is the director of the library. So he said that, you know, look at LCC because there are more opportunities now than when you left. So I looked and was just looking for jobs that seemed like they might be a good fit. And I thought the lead support for advising seemed like it would be something that I would be good at. When I was looking for work, I thought something like administrative assistant, something like that might be something I could do. It's not something that I'd done in the past, but I thought like someone who kind of can manage an office, you know, get things done for people. I thought that's something that I could, you know, reasonably do a good job at. I like doing that. I like kind of looking at work like, you know, it's a puzzle and let's figure it out. That kind of work is.
Well, yeah. I didn't really realize what you did at your previous job, but when you say like the supply chain management, kind of a little bit moving stuff from here, like that's kind of what you're doing in advising in a sense too. You got to make sure that this part goes here and you got this part there. In order for that part to work, you have to kind of have a plan and kind of implement things and think ahead, and you do that for us, and like, oh, we're like, Pat, we need for you to do this, and then not you're gonna be in the background, but you're making everything move. So I kind of agree with what Alan's description was.
And you know, I feel like sometimes, like there, I was dealing with, you know, products and, you know, schedules and big companies, and now, you know, sometimes that could be you're dealing with a big picture and it's not that personalized. And now it's like, oh, now I'm dealing with people and students. And I kind of like that a little bit more. It's nice. It's a nice change.
It's rewarding.
Yeah.
You get that. Well, to talk about that, like when you think about the day to day, what part of your work feels most meaningful to you?
I think, you know, the times when I do get to help a student, you know, like when I can help them get an appointment, or, you know, like sometimes it's hard, you know, in our busier time when you're answering call after call, I need an appointment. Well, there's nothing, I can't get you anything today,
but, right,
you know, try again tomorrow. But the times when I am able to, you know, or they, you know, have an issue, but I'm able to resolve it, you know, that's good. That's kind of work that keeps you coming back.
Exactly.
You know?
No, that is. And you, like, especially during our busy peak times, you get a lot more contact with students probably because they're calling more.
Yeah.
And to make that connection and get them that appointment, you are the best thing going right there, because students really need that. But I'm sure it also makes you feel good.
If you can't make them an appointment, you can maybe point them in the direction of like, well, we can't get you an appointment, but your problem seems like something that e-advising could do.
Right.
So send that email, because maybe that's all you need. You know, if you can't get an appointment, they might be able to help you right now. So
And you got to know all the services, right? Because like you said, you might have to refer them to the program advisor. Oh, you can't meet with the general advisors, but you seem like a good fit for the program advisor. So can make those different
types. That problem sounds like maybe you got to talk to your success coach.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's not us. Maybe that's this.
That's a good thing. Like I say, you are directing a lot of different things and making sure that everybody has what they need to be successful on our side and on the student side. So
And I like working with the student employees too. You know, that's fun.
Well, like listening to you talk about your work and your values, like your values come through. What values guide how you show up both at work and in life?
I think I just like kind of being of service. I feel like it's important to work hard, you know, do your best. But then, you know, it's also important to, you know, I feel like I read a good quote once that was like, work is good, but that's why it's important to save some for tomorrow.
Right.
You know, so, you know, if you can't solve everything today, you can always work on it tomorrow too. You know, it'll be there. It'll be there tomorrow as well, you know.
And that's true. You know, it's like I still have stuff I got to do. And what I can do today, I'm going to do.
Yep.
And then tomorrow, that'll be there, and I'll go ahead and figure that out.
Yeah, or I'll just like, man, I got so many things to do. All right, let's try to prioritize it. Let's get the most important stuff done now. Let's get then we'll do the next most important stuff. Or if I have to find coverage for 5 appointments, I'm going to try to cover the one that's happening next first, then get the one after that, then get the one.
And I see that service spirit in you, Pat. You come to work and to help us. And man, that is major, and it's important. And so I know I don't speak just for our department, but I know for us advisors, we really, really, really appreciate that. So my next question, looking back over the last year, what's something you're really proud of? What made that especially meaningful to you?
on like a personal level. I think just kind of like surviving this last like year of change, because I mean it was pretty tough, you know, not having a job and looking for a job, and you know, it was like 7 months almost, you know, not having work, and you know, so I mean I think we're going to talk about the comedy thing that helped, and then you know, just like getting, you know, small part-time work or, you know, temporary things here or there got me through. But then getting this last April, getting in here was good. And then just, you know, kind of being able to jump in, feeling like I was already sort of familiar with LCC, that probably gave me a leg up, whereas like people would go to the ANS building, like, oh, I know where that is already.
Right, yeah. And I really, I guess, I didn't realize you haven't even been here a whole year yet.
Almost, yeah. Like 10 months.
In April, you'll be here, like you said, a year.
Yep.
But it seems like you've been here a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that in a bad way. It's like a good way, like you've been here. Mm-hmm. And you've came in and just came with your feet on the ground and started running. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, part of me was like, well, I want to try to just like get started as fast as I can. Or yeah.
Yeah, I know. I was laid off for a few years before I found steady work.
Yeah.
And you just appreciative to be working full time, mm-hmm. have a benefits, have the, and that, man, that's priceless in a way.
You
know what I mean? Like, when you think about, you have all this education, you have skills, and then to find a job that you actually like to do.
Because, yeah, I feel like it just, like, messes with your self-worth, because you're like, how many applications did I send?
Right.
And, like, nobody called me back.
Nobody.
Or you're like, you get an interview and feel like, oh, I feel like I did pretty well.
Yeah.
And then you get the, oh, well, we went with somebody else.
Oh,
or
Pat,
you go,
yeah,
like, have an interview. I'm like, I don't know how I felt about that one. But that's the one where they want you to come in for a second one. You're like, oh, okay.
Right. You know? No, but that's true. Yeah, it does take you through a lot of highs and lows.
Yep.
And it makes you think about, like, wow, what does this mean? But if you hold on, you come out on the other side. So
yeah, yeah. So
that's cool. So let's kind of step away from work for a moment. Who are you outside of LCC?
So I feel like it surprises a lot of people to know, you know, I've always had, like, you know, kind of a creative side as well. So, like, I do stand-up comedy outside of work.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I've been doing that since 2012. And I've been a fan of that since, I'd say, like, middle school. We got cable when I was in seventh grade. So, like, after school, I'd watch, like, Comedy Central, you know, like, Saturday Night Live would be on at, like, 3 p.m., like, the reruns of that. And then there'd be, like, comedy specials or whatever would be on. So I'd watch a lot of just comedy, and I always liked it, and I'd quote things, you know, to friends, and was like, oh, that would be fun to try sometime. I did like a few things in college at like talent shows and never tried it, you know, seriously. But then in 2012, I just was like looking for something to try, you know, needed some kind of outlet out after work, mm-hmm. for something to do, and it was something I wanted to try. So I did the open mic at Connections Comedy Club and just kind of kept going from there. Yeah.
That's major, though.
Yeah.
Because to be a comedian, to do that, like, so you write your own jokes.
Yeah.
And see, that's work.
Yep. Yeah.
And then to get up on stage in front of people, see, that probably would, I would have probably tried to fake a heart attack or something the first time to do that, because your nerves, and then, like, well, I don't know. I want to ask you this. This is totally off.
Mm-hmm.
But so when you started and the crowds that you started initially with and now the crowds, do you think there's a shift? Do you think people are more welcoming? Are they less welcoming? What's going on?
I mean,
that?
I feel like I've definitely had like nerves at first, and I don't know that I'm that, like, I don't look at the crowd that much. You know, some people will be like, if you're performing on stage, like, should look above the crowd or whatever.
Right.
Some people will like look at everybody and make a ton of eye contact and like interact with the crowd. And I don't really do that much. I definitely feel like I've gotten better about like moving around and like looking into the crowd more, but I don't do that much of it. Yeah.
You still working on, like, you feel like, are you still developing certain aspects of your comedy?
Yeah. You know,
or do you feel like, okay, this works for me, I'm doing pretty well?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm always trying to develop things, but I feel like, you know, early on, everybody always talked about my writing was really good. And so it was like, I was like, you know, you're a strong writer. I don't know if my performance was always there, but it was like my performance worked for my writing.
Gotcha.
You know? Yeah. But, you know, I've had some good opportunities. I've gotten to do a lot of cool things. Like I you know, feel like I've worked with Gary Gulman, who's like he's a pretty he's pretty big, and he did a special that was on HBO about like his battles with depression and stuff like that. So he's awesome to work with, and so it seems like anytime he comes through Michigan again, he'll have me open for him. Which
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So you left an impression.
Yeah.
It must have did pretty good.
Yeah.
So that's what's up, Pat. I love that. I've never, you know, people always say I'm hilarious, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not trying to be funny. I think that's probably why I'm funny, because I'm not trying to be funny. But I do admire that skill and that you're able to do that. Because
yeah.
I don't know that I could.
Yep.
So, well, we know that comedy kind of recharges you.
Yeah.
But, and you're not, when you work here, you get some joy. But when you're not doing comedy or you're not on campus, what other thing recharges you or brings you joy?
You know, I like spending time with family and friends too. Like to read a lot, you know.
Okay.
Feel like I read a wide variety of things, you know, sometimes historical books, you know, still try to get that history interest fed, I guess fantasy and sci-fi as well.
Okay.
You know, yeah, see, try to think anything else. Try to see movies as often as I can. I have like that Celebration Cinema membership
where okay.
you see like the 3 movies a week.
Oh.
Don't usually use that as I don't use that to its fullest, but you know, try.
But it's there.
Yep.
And it's something to do. I like Celebration Cinema. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it's like $20 a month, and you could see 3 movies a week.
Now that would be worth it. But see, the thing of it is for me, like, I'll get on a roll, and then me and Michaela, we'll go and see movies, and then it's a dry spot where I don't find any movie that's out that I'm interested in, and so I'm like, oh, okay.
Like, there were a few weeks recently where I was like, yeah, I don't really want to see any.
Yeah, no, that's something interesting to check out. So this one is fun. And it'd be interesting because you present one way to me, but then when you're telling me you're a comedian is something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, do you consider yourself more of an introvert, an extrovert, or somewhere in between?
I feel like somewhere in between. I feel like I was pretty much, like, total introvert most of my life. I feel like maybe starting to do comedy maybe pushes me out a little bit, you know, maybe in, like, all aspects of my life, but feel like it's not a total change though, so I'd say more right now probably somewhere in between.
Well, that's cool though. I think you know, most people are somewhere in between. Our some our jobs or different hobbies make us be more extroverted than we may really want to be. But
I mean, I guess, you know, left to my own devices, if I don't have anything going on, I might just be at home, you know, all day. But then I'll be like, oh, I should have done something. I should have gone out and found something to do or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Well, as we start to wrap up, what do you hope people feel when they interact with you? Like, what do you hope they get from you?
I hope they feel that I listened to them and, you know, tried to do the best I could to, you know, help them out if they had a problem, or, you know, just that I, someone who, you know, cared and did the best I could for them.
And you do give that off because you do care about people. Well, finally, if someone is listening right now and trying to find their place at LCC, what advice would you want to share with them?
I would say just kind of put yourself out there, you know, ask questions and, you know, find places where something needs to get done that isn't getting done and see what you can do to help. You know, that's kind of things that I've tried to do, you know, like
teamwork.
Yeah. I feel like when I started here, I was kind of like, oh, is this something that hasn't been done for a while that needs to get done? You know, oh, I can do that. You know,
yeah. Help and be useful and come in and want to do things. So I appreciate that. You know, I appreciate you taking the time, Pat. I thank you for sharing your story and your perspective with us today. it's been a pleasure having you on Who's That Star.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Lisa.
Everybody, thanks again. You've been listening to Who's That Star. I'm Lisa A., and you can listen to this episode of Who's That Star and other shows from LCC Connect anytime online at lccconnect.org. Thank you for listening. Catch me next time to find out who's that star.
Examining the issues and topics that affect our lives from the local level to the world stage. Listen to the programs of LCC Connect anytime at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
K-12 Operations at Lansing Community College has been a proud collaborator of the Lansing Promise Scholarship since 2012. The Lansing Promise Scholarship offers graduating high school seniors who live within the Lansing School District and attend a high school within district boundaries an opportunity to attend LCC. Since its inception, over 1,000 enrolled students have saved over $2 million, earning over 400 degrees and certificates, as well as 30,000 credits at LCC. For more information on the Lansing Promise Scholarship, please visit lcc.edu/hope.
Hi, I'm Greg Ladig, and I host a show called Stars on Sports with Assistant Athletic Director Stephen Cutter here on LCC Connect. It's all about Lansing Community College Athletic Department. You can always find out more about Stars on Sports and listen on demand at lccconnect.org.
It doesn't matter if you're 22 or 62. Whether you're trying to figure out how to pay off a student loan or how you're going to pay for retirement. Maybe you're a parent trying to provide for your family, struggling to pay the bills on time. The tough economy is affecting all of us, and it can be overwhelming. There's no need to fight the battle alone. The National Foundation for Credit Counseling wants you to know there is help available for whatever kind of debt problem you're facing. The NFCC is a nonprofit organization with more than 50 years of experience. Certified counselors in your area can help you take the first step in getting a grip on your finances. And they can help create a personalized plan and show you how to make educated decisions about your financial future. You are not alone. Let the NFCC help get you started. Call them at 800-388-2227 or visit debtadvice.org. That's 800-388-2227 or visit debtadvice.org. This has been a public service from the NFCC.
The Adult Enrichment Program offers community members the opportunity to discover the art and skill of creative welding and metalwork. Those who are brand new to welding or have years of experience can create their own projects. From sculptures and wall art to functional metal pieces, this class, taught by LCC welding faculty, is open to all skill levels. Visit lcc.edu/keeplearning for more information.
This has been LCC Connect Weekly, a presentation of LCC Connect, a podcast network developed by Lansing Community College. Production and sound engineering for LCC Connect Weekly and its podcasts are provided by Dedalian Lowry and Brendan Skipper. Our theme song, Start a New Day, is performed by Samuel Biggs and licensed through DeWolf Music. Powered by the voices of LCC staff, faculty, students, and community volunteers, LCC Connect shares conversations and stories that reflect the creativity, culture, and the spirit of our college and community. We thank all of our hosts and contributors for sharing their time and talents. To hear today's featured podcasts on demand, learn more about the network, become a guest, or explore ways to get involved, visit us anytime at lccconnect.com.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.